Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmakers Show. So today we have an amazing founder. You know, we're going to be talking a lot about, you know, the good stuff that we like to hear, the building, the scaling, the financing. Also, you know, like how, you know, they didn't really get a great start, but now they're actually making a killing. And then how they think about really shaping and having a long-term view where it doesn't matter, you know, the short term, because the vision, you know, is always way beyond that. So again, super inspiring, the conversation in front of us. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Eric Chen. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
So originally born in China, but you don't remember much of that because you moved to Colorado quite early on in your life. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Yeah, basically like born in China, moved to Colorado like, I don't know, like 6 months or like a year old, et cetera. I don't really remember. And kind of like had like a kind of formative years spent in like a Boulder, Colorado, which is kind of like a very, very like Midwest type of setting and environment. It was honestly like kind of like a very fond memory thinking back, just kind of like getting in like a sense of community and kind of like a small like suburb community, kind of like upbringing environment. But then like moved to Hong Kong pretty quick, which is a very, very drastic like 180 degree shift into something that's very urban, very packed. So definitely, you know, had to spend a lot of time like getting used to that since elementary school.
And how do you think that your worldview, you know, shaped up, you know, like with being in all these different places, all these different countries?
It's very difficult to like compare myself against like, you know, like a standard upbringing or like, you know, what most would be considered to be like standard upbringing, just because over time, it's very much of a kind of like a subconscious type of difference that you realize after a fact. And for me, it was more like, you know, like I just in generally have like a much more globalized view, being able to tell the difference between like kind of like the environment or like the biases growing up in America versus the biases you see like growing up in like non-American settings, like in Asia, et cetera. But more importantly, it's more about like the propagation of technology and innovation. You oftentimes don't see that, or you see that in like a secondary effect in like non kind of like American nations. Most of the new innovations, most of the new like kind of like technology, it's typically only available in America or selected European countries first before it makes its way into Asia. Or worse yet, like it ends up being like a localized Asian counterpart of those like similar type of technology that like gets shows up to like everyone's daily lives instead of, you know, like the original like innovation itself.
And in your case, how did you get into computers?
Honestly, like, first of all, like just being able to access a lot of content in Hong Kong, like you would simply not be able to access like the, you know, like the latest and greatest. So you have to like really fiddle with the internet back then. And I say that like, you know, pretty loose term, trying to like go through like the dark web sometimes, or like, you know, trying to like hop around. So that was kind of like the initial impression. I didn't know the implications of everything. I just know, you know, which tool to use, you know, like what are some of the concepts and primitives within those, you know, like kind of like the open web ecosystem. And over time, like moving from Hong Kong to, you know, Northern California, and when I was like, you know, closer to high school, that was truly what shaped kind of like computer/software for me, getting in touch in the tech scene, like being next to all the, you know, tech company HQs, but more importantly, you know, just seeing everyone's, you know, parents or seeing every single peer like drenched within something related to tech, and also like a very, very strong like a coding scene, like all the way starting from high school, being able to join like hackathons and stuff like that. It's almost like, you know, like I was forced to learn how to code to be able to kind of like get to know my new peers at the time.
Now, in your case, it sounds like ultimately you decided to take a little of a different path. And instead of like going into the whole software engineering thing, you ended up going for finance in college. What was that the case?
Yeah, I mean, like, imagine just like being in like a space or like, you know, being in like a region where like everyone is in software engineer, right? Like everyone is working on something related to software. Everyone is working on something related to tech. You're going to think like, oh, like maybe this is a bit of a bubble. You probably want to get out of it, just get like a fresh perspective. Or maybe like this industry is a little bit like oversaturated. It doesn't make sense to have that many like mind share or, you know, like that many like high value job postings out there. And so, you know, I needed to get like a different perspective of things. So decided to pursue, you know, something more on the finance side, kind of having like the impression of like finance is, you know, more like quant driven, et cetera, and figure like I can like think of or develop more like bleeding edge research over there. And then like upon like kind of like actually going to college and like taking all the like courses and stuff like that, I realized like at the end of the day, like STEM is still like the most important like undergraduate like education that I could possibly have, you know, tossing away just CS, maybe even going down like math, etc. And, you know, basically went back into the embrace of tech pretty much right after like the first few courses I took in college.
Now, you wanted to go into perhaps academia and research. What really caught your interest about that potential path?
Yeah, I think, you know, like in like a weird sense, I found a lot of the curriculums offered in like business schools or like, you know, a lot of stuff related to finance. So it was a little bit too simple. It was a little bit too rudimentary. And, you know, it just wasn't really like stimulating, how do I call it, like intellectually in a sense. It was very difficult for me to like, because like everyone, you know, starting off college, they're just trying to find like what they're truly passionate about and what they're interested in. Definitely, you know, whatever the major to decide in or like whatever like career path they decide in, it's probably, you know, like a little bit premature to do so. And for me, it was like, it was for the very first time, like I found a lot of joy, like, you know, looking into a lot of theoretical side of computer science, especially, you know, down like the cryptography path. And I think, you know, cryptography just so happened to be like a specific discipline where like the, you know, prerequisite for a lot of the knowledge is actually pretty easy to grasp and like pretty easy to catch up on, considering the fact that, you know, like you generally like can cover that very quickly in the first year of like first few years of like pure math. And I just got a lot of, you know, almost like instant gratification from like kind of like focusing and concentrating on like the cryptography path, being able to like, you know, be 100% concentrated for days on end, forgetting to eat, to like doing research and like, you know, reading all the textbooks just like all by myself without any type of like course requirements, et cetera. And just kind of like ventured there. And then before I know it, like I realized that, you know, I've progressed much further and much quicker than like most of my peers are going down that path and being able to like kind of like contribute alongside a lot of more senior, like, you know, first year or second year PhDs.
So then dropping out, you know, ends up becoming an option. You know, what point was it clear that you needed to wrap up, you know, the school years?
I think it's also about like timing. Basically at that time, like it was like roughly 2017 or 2018. It's when the space, you know, crypto or like blockchain got very, very exciting. And you start to see a lot of real world application of a lot of theoretical stuff I was working on or researching in cryptography. And I realized that it's time for me to like dip my toe into the industry. And, you know, this is kind of like a now or never type of chance for me to like go into it. And honestly, like I was also in a bit of a, you know, fork in the road in terms of like my academic career in a sense, which is like, you know, it's probably time for me to like switch into like, you know, major at a different college, et cetera, that, you know, can make me better for like, you know, research path and like, you know, PhD, et cetera. Or, you know, like getting some industry experience and then like revisit that path later. And I realized, you know, like industry knowledge over time is probably just a lot more valuable, especially after interfacing with a lot of, you know, seasoned academics. And I realized that it's not necessarily what I want to be doing for the next 10 years, at least, you know, right away.
So then let's talk about the idea, you know, that came about, you know, with really venturing into the unknown, really becoming an entrepreneur with Injective. How did that happen? How did the idea come knocking and how did you go about incubating it and being like, okay, let's go with this?
Honestly, like the start was pretty kind of boring in a sense. Because like for me, it was never the plan to like start a company or like start like a project. Maybe at most like to build like a product that other people would use in like a, you know, like an open source way, just to, you know, get some like real world like end to end like kind of like engineering experience in a sense. I would say like really like what kind of sparked like the initial like. Or like the genesis of, you know, Injective Labs and also like later on Injective is we were working on like a research that kind of looks into the implementation of a specific like cryptographic primitive called like verifiable delay function that was kind of like developed by like the professor like I was working with a little bit. And basically I realized it was like very, very groundbreaking. It was very exciting. So like, you know, first of all, I tried like looking into like ways to improve upon it. And then in parallel, also looking into like potential applications for it, kind of like far beyond like, you know, what they have initially like outlined for it. And one of the application was basically kind of like envisioning or like realizing like a safe and fully decentralized on-chain like exchange mechanism within, you know, Ethereum and any other like smart contract enabled chain. And back in the day, like there were like on-chain DEXs, et cetera, but all of them were extremely like primitive, and they're also like, you know, very, very difficult to use and, you know, unsafe to use as a matter of fact at scale. And it was honestly simply like, hey, here's a, you know, new like cryptographic primitive. Here's like a problem that's, you know, addressing like a small kind of like a market at the time. And here is, you know, like a solution that we came up with utilizing, you know, this specific like mechanism to address it, to bring it and like, you know, solve some of the headaches that could probably add like a few $100,000 or like, you know, a few $1 million of value to the ecosystem. And, you know, it got a lot of, you know, interest from like various like kind of like engineers, like, and also founders within the space. And that kind of drew us into like, you know, potentially, you know, like going into like building it out, given the scale of the project itself and really scaling it from that point on. And obviously, you know, got us into a lot of incubation program offers, et cetera, like right off the bat.
So then for the people that are listening, you know, to really get it, what ended up being the business model of Injective?
Yeah, so Injective has evolved a lot since then. As a matter of fact, like, you know, it has pivoted quite drastically away from like the specific initial like idea and implementation. But at this point, you know, it actually never deviated from like what it's trying to do and what it's trying to offer, which is building like base layer infrastructure that's hyper-optimized for like general financial applications. In a sense, it's basically like a blockchain that's focused on like, you know, financial apps. Currently, you know, like as a decentralized ecosystem for the Injective chain, it manages, you know, like facilitate like 30-ish to $40 billion of trading volume, you know, like close to a billion transactions on chain at this point, and also like a lot of value kind of like entrenched within like Injective ecosystem. And for Injective Labs, you know, it also contributes to a lot of like research and development work for a lot of open source software and also protocols, mainly obviously to an Injective chain, but also a lot of dApps on top of it. So yeah, like definitely it's, you know, like the idea of kind of like what sparked the creation of Injective Labs remained, but obviously like, you know, like the product itself, the general like, you know, tech stack has evolved drastically since then.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So then I guess for the people that are listening here to really get it, I mean, this has not been like a straight line. You know, it has been bumpy. And in fact, the early beginnings, you know, were not as fast as you guys would have hoped. So at what point do you guys realize that you were finally turning a corner here?
Yeah, I mean, it's been like 6 or 7 years almost since like the initial start of Injective Labs. So it's been, you know, like a bumpy ride to say the least, starting off in like 2018-ish, 2017, and, you know, like iterating on the initial product, realizing or running into like, you know, like engineering, like roadblocks, and then like, you know, slowly refining the product, refining like the mechanism and protocol. And it also happened to be like by the time like we finished the initial incubation program with like, I remember like probably like $500,000 or less in like cash. It was also like the peak death of crypto winter at that time. It was like, you know, end of 2018, like, you know, going into 2019. And for us, it was just very, very difficult to like, you know, like get like a venture funding to like, you know, progress to like, you know, scale up. And, you know, we were forced to be very, very economical and very, very lean in terms of development process to like get the product out to like, you know, sell everyone on like, you know, like what we're trying to build and like, you know, what are the promises. And definitely, you know, DeFi wasn't even like a term or a thing back then. So not there weren't a lot of like promise from people or like in people's mind about like, you know, doing like financial applications or financial utilities in an on-chain fashion. So going from there to like 2020, I believe, was the first time, you know, like DeFi really picked up and people were seeing the promise. We finally built out, you know, a lot of like initial like demo and like testnet applications. And yeah, like got like the seed round and then progressed very, very quickly after that. But I think, you know, the spirit and like the DNA kind of like persisted throughout, which is, you know, plan for like years and years of runway, plan for like years and years of longevity, plan for the worst. And for our case, you know, like be extremely conservative, knowing that, you know, nothing kind of like glamorous or like, you know, like how to call it, like good times, you know, just simply doesn't last forever. And no matter like how optimistic as might seem for like the future of the space, even like this, for example, like in 2021, where like basically it seems like, you know, like the industry was going to balloon like by like an order of magnitude day after day, always, you know, plan for the worst and like basically make sure like, you know, you can always persevere with what you have for the next 5 to 10 years. And honestly, that helped a lot. Like we never had to, you know, downsize because of runway issues. We never had to like, you know, like kind of like retract or like scale down or, you know, kind of like, how do I put it? Like cancel a lot of things due to like runway concerns, et cetera. For us, it was just, you know, like another day being extremely consistent at a current pace and being able to output significantly more when everyone has like burned through their like kind of like treasury expecting, you know, like there would be like rounds and rounds of like venture financing, et cetera. And for our case, you know, like we were just consistent regardless of times and downtimes.
So I guess, you know, when you're raising money too, you know, the vision is a critical one, no? So double clicking on what you're sharing here. If you were to go to sleep tonight and you were to wake up in a world where the vision of Injective is fully realized, what does that world look like?
I would say that's also a very, very exciting thought. And at the same time, a very daunting one. Because, you know, like in a future where like, you know, what we're building for or like, you know, currently what we plan for, like truly materializes and achieves, it means that like, you know, some of the most critical stack within a financial system utilizes network one way or another. You know, like New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, Cboe, et cetera. You know, for any type of exchange house for securities, derivatives, or anything like that, it settles on top of Injective one way or another via different venues. And also like a lot of the financial transactions eventually treats Injective as like the final stop for like clearing, et cetera. And this is to, you know, like resolve like one of the biggest issues currently that exists within finance, which is T+2 settlement issue. And it has shown its, you know, shortfalls and, you know, limitations time and time again by like GameStop and many, many more other such instances.
So I guess, you know, the whole world of crypto and blockchain, you know, as a whole, where is it heading? Because I mean, right now it sounds like the summer is back.
Yeah, I think basically, you know, given the cyclical nature of a lot of these, you know, rapidly growing like technological trends, you know, same case for AI, et cetera, it's going to be, you know, like a very, very strong spike in interest and then, you know, like a tapering over time. And sometimes, you know, like you're going to see like overzealous or sometimes, you know, even to the point of irrational like allocation of capital or interest, et cetera. And, you know, you're going to just see like a plateau period where like a lot of them starts coming back down and then like things are starting to becoming undervalued oftentimes. So it's going to reverberate like these type of like oscillating cycles time and time again until it reaches a maturity stage. The bright side is that, you know, the amplitude of all these, you know, like up and downs, it will slowly go down in like a close gap over time. So for me, like, I think honestly, the most exciting thing about like these type of technology trends is that like it gets boring over time. where like, you know, you're not going to see like ridiculous stuff of like people are just, you know, randomly, like just honestly at the end of the day, it's just luck making like millions and millions of dollars from like, you know, like capitalizing on something that, you know, definitely doesn't make sense in hindsight and definitely doesn't make sense at the time being. And yeah, like basically becomes a mature industry where really the true progress and true milestones are kind of like traditional financial institutions and, you know, like general like financial applications are slowly integrating, incorporating it, and it kind of like makes a way into people's daily life without most people maybe even knowing it.
So as you are now, you know, over 6 years into this, you know, if you had the opportunity of going back in time and maybe you're able to see that younger Eric that is maybe, you know, coming out of university that day that you made the decision, I'm dropping out of this thing and, you know, building my own future. And let's say you were able to see that younger self coming out, you know, of campus and there's a table there, you know, and you're able to sit down with that younger Eric and have a conversation. And during that conversation, you're able to give that younger Eric one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Honestly, I'll just lie to him and just say that everything's going to be fine. I think honestly, like all the experience that we had, oftentimes we kind of like blame it and just say like, oh, like, you know, if we were lucky in terms of timing, et cetera, like, you know, like we would have, you know, reached a scale like 10x of like where we are now, or like, you know, had a much, you know, smoother growth, or like kind of like hit like a lot of like the stats that we're looking for a lot sooner. But honestly, like in hindsight, like those are all necessary for us to, you know, reach the level of maturity and also like kind of like acumen that we have now. And, you know, to be confident about like, is sometimes like being conservative during like kind of like greedy times, it's like very, very important, and, you know, it'll pay off. And like sometimes, you know, being aggressive when like everyone else is being like extremely conservative is also like equally important. So I think, you know, like this is one of those things where it's like, you know, like just because someone told you, it's not going to be, you know, like meaningful or like helpful, or it's not going to be really truly like manifested in the way of doing like through and through. So really it's about experience, like having like the tough times and, you know, like being extremely economical in terms of decisions, having to go through like very, very, how do I call it, like scrappy periods where like, yeah, you have to, you know, do almost everything yourself and every single layer, learn all the stuff, even if you don't want to get it off the ground running, and to build up that experience so that, you know, like you make the proper and sound decisions later on. I think, you know, like only like a real life experience will help you with that. If I were to have like a slightly, you know, like a better starting condition, let's say, you know, just somehow got lucky and like got like a nice, like a few million dollar seed round, et cetera, I feel like my advice to my younger self would be like, basically it's like, don't waste the money. Like treat as if you only have like, you know, like 1/10 of that. Like if you raise 2 million, like just treat as if you only have $200,000 and you're going to be thankful for it later on.
So for the people that are listening, Eric, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
So I'm pretty active on Twitter or x.com. My handle is like at Eric Injective. And I think honestly, like the best way is to, you know, like learn more about Injective at injective.com or through like our company, which is injectivelabs.org. And, you know, you should be able to find my email there and reach out to me as well.
Amazing. Well, hey, Eric, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.